Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Project Empowerment with Kathleen, a show dedicated to empowering lives everywhere by bringing you people, stories, ideas, and inspiration to help each of us make our world a better place. And if you wish to participate during today's show, you can log into the chat room at projectempowerment.info. Or if you're willing and ready, if I could talk today, you're welcome to call in at 347-945-5441 with your questions. And so today I'm super excited and honored to have on author Regina Rowley. Regina is a wife, mother, speaker, author, and instructor. She enjoys making a difference volunteering as an active member of the Brazos County Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and as president of Professional Speakers BCS, a Toastmasters International Club, where she's completed her CC and CL awards. And we're going to be discussing her empowering work for women to help them find their voice and what she does to help them do that. You can visit her website at www.reginarowley.com. That's R-E-G-I-N-A-R-O-W-L-E-Y. com. So thank you for joining me today, Regina. I really appreciate your time out of your busy schedule to come on my show.
Oh, well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Excellent. So we were just briefly chatting before the show about some news topics that we're going to bring up a little bit later. But first of all, before we really get into it, if you could do me a favor and just kind of introduce yourself, share a little bit more about your work. I gave you, you know, I shared a little bit, but about your work and what you do with the Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and then we'll discuss some of your other projects that you do.
Sure. So with the Brazos County Coalition Against Domestic Violence, I have been an active member, but then I have on occasion stepped up to fulfill roles such as, you know, bringing media exposure. I do some of the TV interviews when we have events going on, fundraisers, things like that. And then obviously getting out in our community to help bring awareness to the topic of domestic violence, the difference of healthy relationships versus unhealthy relationships. I'm on the education committee, so I've had the privilege of going into some of our high schools to, you know, talk on this topic as well, and to help starting, you know, even in that young age, for them to see what it means to be involved in a relationship that's not healthy. And it's very, very disturbing, Kathleen, because so many times in those settings, those young people are already living in those environments in their home.
I love that. I was invited a couple years ago to speak at a middle school for ninth graders before they started high school on the same thing. I talked about the cycle of violence, teen dating violence, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it was really, it was heartbreaking in a way that several of the kids in those classes came to me afterwards. They wanted more information on where they can get support and help because of what they're already dealing with at home. And it's like, kudos for them for stepping up. I mean, that was huge. And then on top of that, within the classroom, we had counselors and the on-site therapists to kind of work with some of these kids, because we, you know, it's a really difficult topic to talk about. You know, I shared this on my Facebook page. You know, it's like, it's such a heavy, heavy topic that a lot of people, they don't know how to talk about it. For one thing, they don't know how to help someone if they find out they're in crisis, and so they don't say anything. And it's such a difficult thing. So it's like, that was one of the things that, and you could please elaborate on this even more so, is teaching people, how do you talk to someone? If you know someone's in crisis or in living in that violence, how do you work with them? How do you talk to them? What do you do for support? And so, and I mean, I have very simple, basic tools, and I refer them to the professionals that's what they do, the crisis line, et cetera. But this kind of segues into the programs that you're working on, the Stepping Stones from Skeletons. So let's kind of open the conversation with that, if that's all right, and what that is and what your vision is with that.
Yes, of course. Stepping Stones from Skeletons is a way for me to give back to our community, to our world, right? Because the cycle of violence is not limited to just right here in my own neighborhood or even in my own state. Unfortunately, it is worldwide. And so I had this vision after becoming an author and having the opportunity to share a portion of my story in the book, Share Your Message with the World, last year, that there were other women who would like to be able to share their story of survival. They have been in experiences that were none of their choosing and were victimized. Doesn't mean they have embraced and lived the lifestyle of a victim, but the truth is they were still victimized. So they've found a way to move forward and make stepping stones that out of those experiences that have allowed them to live a thriving life. And so in under that concept, I wanted to allow those who are actually in a business or a service that continues to help survivors to find their voice and to find their way forward, to be able to write their story in a printed book that will be able to be put out there for others to pick up and to borrow the confidence and the courage of these authors, right? But it would also serve as a way for them to touch, to be able to get in touch with those counselors, the therapists, the doctors, the massage therapists, the chiropractors, who whatever their specialty is, so that they can get the help they need. You know, because many times these people are coming out of these abusive environments. They do need some help with their physical healing as well as their mental and emotional healing. And so that's where the printed book would be beneficial. But I also want those who perhaps they didn't go into a business or a service that is along those lines, but they still have a story to share and they still want to minister to others and let them find confidence and courage from knowing they're not alone. Because unfortunately, Kathleen, we always feel like we're alone and nobody will understand. And so I am interviewing survivors who are victorious and they're moving forward, they're thriving, and they want to be able to share their story, and I'm going to include it on my blog. And that way they can still get out there and serve others, but maybe it's not the right platform for them to go into a printed book.
You know, and it's these stories that really do make a difference. And it's always heartwarming, you know, like, because I've been doing this show for over 5 years. And, you know, not every show I do is about domestic violence. Actually, my first year, that was all I focused on. I wanted to create, each show was dedicated to different resources, similar to like what you're doing with your book, but I wanted to have it in a platform, in a format that is easy for people to listen to. They could download it. It's free. They don't have to pay for it because that's, I mean, they're already in a destitute situation. I mean, when I was in a shelter for battered women, I was excited to have $5 in my pocket just so I can go buy a taco somewhere because I was relying on the food bank and things that were being donated because I was like starting my life. I mean, I went from a house and a fancy car and all of this stuff to nothing. I had nothing, and I had to flee. And so many women that are in that situation where they're like they're getting by the skin of their teeth. And so it is so valuable to have stories of empowerment from women who have been through Lord knows what, you know, just horrific situations, and they came out. And they've are doing something with their lives. They're doing something bigger, and that's actually one of the things that I really try to teach is for survivors to do your healing work, get yourself, you know, grow through this. Use your story as a way to not just heal yourself, but it'll help heal other people. And like you were just sharing, it's so important and so valuable because I don't know, whenever I would share my story, especially fresh out of that situation, I became a little stronger. I didn't feel like the victim. I felt like the victor, you know. And so it is so important. You know, one of the things that you also do in your work is it's Kuta, K-U-T-A. Can you talk about that and share with us what that is? And
okay. So Kuta is an acronym that stands for Keeping Up the Awareness. And I found that it's actually an ancient form of defense that the Egyptians used to protect the pharaoh. And I was fresh into discovering my life purpose and looking for how I was going to go forward with educating and empowering women, enlightening them to their own inner strength. when, you know, I had to come up with a business name and what kind of self-defense program was I going to teach. And through my internet search, stumbled across CUDA. So I presented it to some friends that I networked with, and they helped me come up with it as an acronym, because that really is such an important part of what I do, is bringing awareness and keeping up the awareness to the fact domestic violence and sexual assault are still so prevalent in society. But in general, it's kept hush-hush. It's still closed up in the closet, swept under the rug, and you just don't air the dirty laundry. And I'm just at a place, Kathleen, where I'm like, forget not airing the dirty laundry. This is a generational situation. This continues to repeat generation after generation because nobody is exposing it. And I've decided no more. I'm going to bring exposure, and we are going to create that change in society.
And you know what? And this exposure is happening. I mean, the Grammys was a huge mm-hmm. testimony to that, with Brooke Extell, where she was on there and she shared her story and her voice. And it was like, she's been a guest on my show too, and I was like, I was in tears when I saw that, because, you know, it's been, I'm sorry, I get emotional about this, because I too, you know, I grew up in domestic violence. I grew up where it was never talked about. It didn't exist. That's how it was. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a family where it was never, it was part of the normal life. And it's like, what's normal? So it's taken me many years of a lot of personal work to understand, like, those dynamics, it was not normal. It was not okay. This is not a healthy relationship. I mean, I've been married and divorced twice because it's been a challenge for me to really learn what healthy is. So that's been my personal focus, is to be an emotionally healthy person. So if I ever get involved in another relationship, I can bring something better to that relationship, as well as not get back into an abusive situation. You know, that is a whole, oh my gosh, that's a whole other thing. Women oftentimes recycle. They keep getting in these relationships, and they're not understanding, well, why is this happening? It's because they haven't done the work. They haven't done the work to really identify the core reasons and their core beliefs as to why they're repeating that again. And I know with your work, you know, with the self-defense, it is important to know how to defend yourself. But I have to say, you know, yes, it is extremely important to do this. But another thing that needs to be done, and that people are hopefully working on, and a huge example we were talking before the show was the man convicted of rape in New Delhi in India, and how he's blaming the victim. If she wouldn't have fought him, she wouldn't have died. And he's blaming her. And my thoughts are, wait a minute. That's, first of all, that's messed up. And his whole, like, there was a quote. It was, let's see, what did he say? He goes, it takes two hands for clapping. He goes, a decent girl wouldn't roam around at 9 o'clock at night. A girl is far more responsible for rape than a boy. Boy and girl are not equal. Housework and housekeeping is for girls, not roaming in discos and bars at night, doing wrong things, wearing wrong clothes. About 20% of girls are good. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh. And this young woman that they murdered wasn't out. She was with her brother, I think it was, and they were just coming from an event or something. I don't remember. She was a student.
Right.
So it's like this mentality, this is the poison that's out there, and it's not the victim. And sadly, we have to teach people to defend themselves from crazy lunatics like this. So anyways, I went off on a tangent there. But sorry.
Okay, I'm with you.
You can tell I'm a little heated about this one.
It's just, I was beyond heated, yes.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I
was very saddened to realize, Kathleen, that we still have this kind of a thought set. I'm escaping the word. The society is embracing this as the norm, even though the culture, excuse me, that's the word I was looking for. They have laws in India against rape, right? But the culture, the mindset of the people has not switched gears and hasn't seen it that way. And so you still have individuals like this person who is imprisoned because of the rape, because they haven't seen that women are just as equal and to be valued and respected as a man. And it takes an ongoing effort of the few that will cry out and stand up to push mm-hmm. for that societal change. So then it comes through enlightenment and education. And mm-hmm. that's where we all of our cultures mm-hmm. start making those shifts, is because someone said, no, this is not right. This is against human rights, period, and we're not standing for it. So then you have to start educating, you have to enlighten, and you have to just keep holding steady and pushing forward for that until you start seeing that change.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And, here in the West, in the United States, when I read that, I'm thinking, holy, that's like, that just shot us back, 40, 50 years? But yet here, even in the States, that mentality still exists. My first ex-husband was that mentality. It was my role to be the little woman. And, I was the stupid one. I was, oh my gosh, I could do a whole show on the abuse that I endured. But the thing is that it's just like, it's mind-blowing that this even exists, that it's still repeated and taught in the home. I mean, it's like I had a therapist on my show yesterday, a psychologist, and she works with couples and works with them on their core issues, et cetera. And we weren't even talking about domestic violence, but it did come up because all of this stuff, it starts within the home. It starts within an individual. And these core beliefs that are taught to them from childhood is what comes up when they grow up and what comes into the relationship when they decide, when they get into a relationship. And it's like, it's all of these things, and it's unless someone identifies that this is not healthy, or they realize this is not right and I'm willing to change, mm-hmm. these cycles are going to continue, And like you were just saying, it's people like us that are standing up saying, you know what, enough of this. We need to do something different, and hence the reason, for your program. It's, it's so important.
It really is, and I believe that it's an international issue, but we have to start where we are, right? We have to start creating that stand and push for equal rights and human rights for everyone, regardless. I mean, it's unfortunate, but animals are treated better in India than women are. And I'm not an anti-animal person. I love my animals. I have three cats laying all around me right now. But the fact is, humanity is even more valuable, right? And when you have cultures that say a woman has no place, that embraces and accepts that you can rape a five-year-old girl just because she's a beggar on the street, this is wrong. Yeah. And we have to stand up and tell the world that it's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. No, I could not agree more. So talk about your the work that you're doing with the, let's see, what was it, the coalition. Talk a little bit more about that. And more than just the self-help, what else do you do besides speaking, et cetera? What are some of the programs that maybe if our listeners are tuning in, what can they do to get involved? Or maybe you're in, let's see, what part of the country are you? You're in Texas, right?
I'm in Texas, yes.
Okay. So what can, let's say they're in that area, what can they do to get involved? Or let's say they're on the other side of the world, what can they do to get involved or to assist or help?
Sure. So there's a couple of things, Kathleen, regardless of where someone is located in the world. First of all, I would love to either find and add to a database that's already existing, or create a database if we don't have it, that is a resource for individuals who are leaving abusive situations. So sometimes they are in a violent environment where they have to call in the legal authorities, the police come, they make the arrest, and they need immediate assistance getting moved out. They need an attorney to help with the proceedings, et cetera. Or maybe they're just leaving peaceably, right? They're just packing up and they're leaving one day. They just want to file for divorce and move on with their lives. Maybe their abuser is not someone who's going to stalk them down, so they don't have to go to the same extreme measures that someone who has a more psychotic abuser, who is of the mindset, if I can't have you, nobody will, and I will hunt you down and kill you. Abusers fulfill, the whole spectrum of abuse there. And so regardless of what a person finds themselves in, they need a resource that they can find online, say, these people are in my area that I can reach out to, and they can help me move, they can help me find an attorney, they can, whatever it is. So if they need a shelter, that's, you know, those services are there and can usually be found.
Right.
But for some, like, and this came up because I live in Texas. An acquaintance over on the East Coast reached out to me in the past month saying, do you know anybody in Arizona? I have a family member who has to move this weekend. Well, I didn't know anything. I didn't know who to put it out there to. And even though I put it on social media, I didn't receive a response. So that's where I thought this database really needs to exist. So that's one way. And then the other way, Kathleen, is I really feel compelled to take my message international. And I would really appreciate the opportunities to have speaking engagements internationally, whether that's by podcast, you know, or through, you know, like with Blog Talk, or even doing a Skype interview or bringing me in person. Whatever it is, I'm open to those opportunities because I believe this message is so important.
Mm-hmm. It is important. You know, and I'm the same way. You know, I do what I can when I'm out there. You know, I do interviews, and I've done speaking engagements, et cetera. You know, when Betty McConey, she's the founder of Girl Child Network Worldwide, which was created out of in Zimbabwe. And she's self-exiled. She lives in England because of her work. She exposed a lot of higher-ups that were, let's just say she exposed their rascalness without getting too in depth, and they threatened to kill her. So she and her family fled, and they live in England. But her organization works with young girls who are rape victims, HIV, AIDS, infants that have been molested and injured. I mean, it's heartbreaking, some of the stories. And so her village is dedicated for girls. And what they do is they work with these young girls. They use peer, kind of like peer, what do you call it? Not counseling, but a lot of times you get more information from your peers, or you're willing to talk to your peers than you would a counselor that's on site. So she's got quite a program in place. And so her foundation is spreading. It's in several parts of Africa, et cetera. But her work is also like what you, is going global. So she's come to Seattle. She flew out to, she spoke at a university on the East Coast and then flew out to Seattle. And she's done it a couple times. We've done a girls' empowerment workshop where we worked with women and teenagers working with these girls just to help them find their voice. And it was so empowering. And I have to say, doing this type of work, it's like, as Betty told me, she goes, even if all we had was one girl that we could work with, that one girl can change the world. And so it's so valuable that we can do stuff like this, that we can get out there and use our voices to help bring awareness, bring empowerment, bring them, you know, the tools to defend yourself should you feel you need to have that. And it's not just about self-defense. It's also about self-empowerment. Because, I mean, if a woman knows that she can break a board or she can do something, you know, I mean, I have to tell you a story. So years and years ago when I was in that first abusive relationship, I took a Taekwondo class. Now, this probably sounds completely maddening to anybody from the outside, but when you're in a situation like that and you don't really get that you're being abused, you could be doing all sorts of stuff that could totally defend yourself, but because of the mental torture that I had endured, I didn't see it. So here I was taking this empowering class, and I was starting to, like, blossom. I was getting stronger, and I came home one day. He would not come and watch me do my certification for the next belt, and I passed. I was so nervous and so excited. I went by myself. I mean, that was a big deal for me because I had to have permission to breathe practically. And so I came home, and he had the boat out, and we were going to go boating that day. And I showed him. I was so proud of myself. I broke a board, you know, with my foot. And he, like, shut down. I mean, he just turned into, like, this different crazy person. And while driving in the car, in the truck, out to the lake, he just blew up. I was totally unprepared. He swung and hit me so hard that I raised my arm in defense, you know, because I didn't know what was coming, and he busted my arm. He broke my arm. He hit me so hard. And then he was so angry. He goes, "I'm so sick of you," and then throws me in the back of the truck. Literally, physically picks, because I was really skinny and light, thin back then. So he physically picked me up while he's driving. And I'm in the back of this truck, you know, bouncing down the road in excruciating pain, just in shock because I didn't know what happened. I just couldn't figure it out. And so we're out all day in a boat, and a friend was with us, and he was drinking. And it's like I had to pretend. I lied. I said, "Well, I tripped and fell. That's why my arm is hurting." And I was in so much pain. And I went through the whole day. And then finally when we get back to the house, I said, "I think I need to go to the hospital. I think my arm's broken." And he goes, "Well, I'm not driving you." And I'm left-handed, and we had a stick, we had to drive with a stick shift. And so I drove myself to the hospital and had to get the arm set, and then had to wait several days before I could find an orthopedic doctor that would see me because I had no insurance. And I had to set up, I mean, it's just, I look back and it's like, I don't know how I did this, but I went through that whole situation on no painkillers. Because I was working too. I was basically his little white slave, to put it bluntly.
Yeah.
So we had a cleaning business, and I cleaned restaurants, and I was working, pushing a mop, vacuuming, doing all this with a busted arm. And then finally when they put me in a cast, I was in a full arm cast, and I had no help from him. I mean, I look back and I'm like, why the heck did I put up with all of that? But like I was saying earlier, it's that psychological manipulation and control that they are so into in it. And I was so into the relationship by that time. You know, we were married for a few years, and it's madness. It's madness that women even, you know, put up with that, let alone live with it. And my situation was not nearly as bad as so many other stories I've heard. It's like, it's heartbreaking. But anyway,
Yeah.
But, you know, granted, I took an empowering class, but yet because I didn't see and realize and understand that I was in an abusive situation, it didn't empower me to leave the situation. I hope I'm making sense. That's what was the whole point of the story.
Because it all starts between our ears, Kathleen, and that's the message that is so forceful and so much a part of what I do. I mean, that's everything I do starts with the message. What happens between your ears impacts anything else you will do. And your story is a perfect example. It lines right up with what I'm telling them is you can take all the self-defense classes you want. Doesn't matter if you take my CUDA classes or you take anything else out there that's available or if you take them all. If you do not value yourself, if you do not see worth for yourself, and the message between your ears is that you're not worthy of being protected, then you will never use what you have to use. Those skills, the techniques that you learn, you won't use them because between your ears, you don't believe you're worth it. And so we have to change that message. We have to, you know, create that impact in society, helping women to realize that regardless of what the magazine covers look like or what they see on a screen that says this is what a beautiful woman is, regardless of any of that, we have to understand that we are enough. You are enough. You are beautiful. You are strong and you are confident. You are worth protecting. When you start embracing that, when you understand the truth, instead of hiding behind the fears, false evidence that appears real because of what society has embraced or has put in front of us, then we can change the dynamics of what's happening in our society. But if we keep believing those lies, then we'll never value ourselves because we don't measure up to the photoshopped images that the world puts out there. And we won't.
Oh my God.
That's not reality.
Yeah. No. And teaching women to be their own authentic selves and being okay with it and loving it. And it's like that for me has been such a huge, huge growth and learning for me. I mean, especially through this last divorce, because I'm the one that ended the marriage. We were together, and I share a lot of my stuff on air because I know my story is going to help someone out there. I mean, it's always heartwarming, especially when I recently just got word that someone shared my show link with another woman who is in an abusive situation. And honestly, I don't even know which shows she listened to. I heard she listened to a few, and she finally became strong enough, or used whatever it was that triggered her, became strong enough to leave the abuse, and she got out of it. And it's like I broke down in tears, because it's like it's you don't know who you're going to help. So anyways, to backtrack, and I hope I don't lose my thought pattern here, or train of thought here, but you know, I chose to end the second marriage. There was a lot of dysfunction, there was a lot of stuff, and I was growing. You know, it's like I had written my book, because I knew it was time to finally share with the world about my, you know, what I went through living in a domestic violence situation. My book is called Escaping the Glass Cage, Survival and Empowerment from Domestic Violence. And so, but it's a short book. I wrote it for women in crisis, because I didn't want something long and drawn out and gory and, you know, using shock to, you know, this is what she went through type of thing. I wanted something that would give empowerment and provide tools to help them, you know, at least give them an idea of what I did to get my life together, to get out of that situation. Right. So hopefully I wouldn't get back into it. Well, with my second marriage, things, you know, life happens. People change, people grow differently, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I was doing a lot of self-work, a lot of, you want to use the phrase self-help. But I really dove into it after my second son got sick. Both my kids have type 1 diabetes. And so when my second one got diabetes, I was doing a lot of soul searching. And I was realizing, you know, I need to do, this has been brewing inside of me for a very long time, and it's time. It's time to get it out. So I wrote my book, it got published, and then shortly after that I started doing my radio show, and I started reading a lot more books. I have a wonderful library now, which was one of my dreams when I got out of the shelter, was to have a library. And so reading lots of empowering books. I'm a fan of nonfiction, things that are, you know, teaching, you know, self-educating on the psychology behind why we do what we do and the core belief, you know, and different stuff like that. And then reading different stories about how other people have survived. So long story short, I remember when I finally said, you know, this I'm not happy in this relationship. I can't do this anymore. And it was probably the hardest thing I'd done. Even leaving the abusive situation was easier than dealing with this, because I have children. I didn't know how I was going to take care of them. I didn't know what I was going to do, how I was going to pay the bills, because he turned to drugs and pretty much has, you know, abandoned his family, etc. So I knew I made the right decision, but it was really, really, really hard. And to swallow my pride and admit to the fact that, oh my gosh, I'm dealing with a lot of these same things again in my second marriage, but I didn't see it because the first one was so extreme. So when the second one was happening, I didn't see it. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I can't believe I fell for it again. So no one is immune, but it's so, the whole point of all of this is really to emphasize the importance of working on yourself and stop blaming, you know, the other person. Granted, everybody's got their faults, but you have to own your stuff is the whole point of that story.
Well, that's true. And while we may find ourselves in situations that we, if we had known differently, wouldn't have chosen, right? At the same time, we do have the opportunity to be responsible to take a step and move ourselves out of it. So, I don't think we need to sit around passing blame, saying I wouldn't be in this position if so-and-so hadn't done such and such to me. But at the same time, there is sex, right? I mean, especially in a child's world, they don't have the kind of choices that we as adults have. A big, big push of why I do what I do is because my abuse was during my childhood. My mother chose to stay, not knowing that she could do any different. And then I had a friend who was staying. She had children. And then I walked in one night and saw the fear in her child's eyes, and I related. And I thought, this woman is making the choice to stay or to leave. So women have that opportunity. The children don't, but the children suffer with them when they stay. And it doesn't mean there's not suffering when they leave. It doesn't mean it's easy, but it's definitely safer and provides them with a hope for a future that's going to be violent-free, right? Where
right.
if they stay
oh,
in
my
that,
gosh.
Then,
yeah.
then they're
yeah.
set up to repeat that pattern in their adult years because they think that's what's normal. They think that's what everybody does. What other relationship pattern do they have to set their example by? And so that's we have to make those decisions as adults.
Oh, you are so right. I was reading something recently. A fellow author, he's been on my show a couple times. He's a psychotherapist, and he was a defense attorney for a long time. He's based out of Canada. And he was writing about that, about the victim, and then the person that finally decides to leave for the children's sake. You know, I mean, it is so daunting to think on you're going to take on this responsibility to be a single parent. I mean, it's such an overwhelming thing, and I would always admire women who have done that. Men too. I don't want to exclude men. I'm just using women because that's the bulk of it right there.
Correct.
But it's so daunting and it's overwhelming, and it's like you just don't know when you can get your next breath. But it's so valuable because, just like you said, these children, we have to protect them. That's our role. That's our responsibility to be the, because they're watching our example. You know, and that's what scared me. That's what terrified me, because it's like, oh my God, I don't want my children to grow up in the situation that I grew up in. I don't want them to feel that they have to stay in something that's unhealthy simply because their mom did. And so I had to make some pretty heavy, big, difficult choices, and it was really, really hard. And, you know, my kids, it's taken a couple of years for them to finally, you know, their grades are improving. They enjoy going to school again. I mean, it was a huge, major impact on the family. And I can only imagine what it'd be like for, you know, those kids that have to go live in a shelter, or they have to, you know, move to another part of the country because their mom needs to flee. I mean, so it's so important, like you were saying earlier, to find out what these resources are. What can we do to provide resources where people can have a safe and loving environment, if not to stay, at least to go for therapy or for coaching or for just support, you know.
Right. Yeah, so they know they're not alone. You're bringing up some very valid points, ones that I've embraced all along, and that is that typically when a woman flees, she's in a position, let me rephrase it, so often she's in a position where she has no financial resources, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Domestic violence has no boundaries. So it is even in your upper class, very affluent environment. And so sometimes when they part, they do have some financial resources and they just need a way to get out. But often, even in that case, the abuse does include financial abuse. And so it doesn't matter what their life has been or what their circle in society has been. When they try to make that break, then they're starting all over and they're at rock bottom. And so I like to put that out there to clear the air and to help people understand abuse comes in many forms. So we're addressing a lot of domestic violence as far as physical violence. We've now touched on the psychological and the financial. But, I mean, there's the emotional abuse, that mental abuse that keeps them so bound. Because this is somebody, Kathleen, that they love. Right, they've invested their heart and their emotions into this person. How could that person really hate them that much and to treat them, you know, so poorly? Or it goes through that cycle of abuse where the abuser has a fallout, the abuse gets committed, and then they're apologetic and they're bringing gifts and they're, you know, promising it'll never happen again. And, you know, it just continues that vicious cycle. And so it's hard when your emotions are that wrapped up in it to really see clearly and understand what is happening, and that regardless of how I got myself here, I have to get out.
Yeah, yeah. There's, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm really glad we're talking about this because there are, you know, I know from personal experience, I experienced probably almost all of the different forms of type of, you know, religious abuse.
Right.
My ex was a minister in the church.
Mm-hmm.
He would use the
yep.
Holy Book, as it were. I'm just going to use that
yep.
in general because it goes across all religions.
Yes.
That he would use that against me, that he is the lord of the house, and he, you know,
yep.
whatever his whole ego trip thing was going off there. And then, so there was the religious abuse. There was this, it's religious and spiritual abuse. There was the financial abuse. He controlled everything. And then there was the physical, the emotional, and there was gaslighting. There was times, and so those listening, gaslighting is a way of, it's actually after a movie, I think it was back in the 30s, where this man was slowly poisoning his wife, and he would turn off the lights, which was gas-powered, and then turn them back on, and he would tell her that nothing was wrong, that she's crazy. And so it was that type of thing that I went through, that there was times like I did not know what was up or what was down because of the psychological games that this guy would play. And I was so emotionally fragile. I mean, Regina, I tried killing myself 3 different times. And I tried, you know, I didn't know who I was anymore. There was a time I had a loaded gun to my head, and I was ready to just pull the trigger. And he's the one that got the gun. He says, well, if you can't live, you know, you're not worth it, blah, 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 all this stuff. So he grabs the gun, hands it to me, and I'm ready to kill I'm in my living room, and I'm ready to, you know, pull the trigger. And he grabs the gun, and he says, you're crazy. You belong into a mental institution. And I was, at that time, I was so hollow and shelled, I couldn't even cry. I had nothing left, or at least I thought I had nothing left. But this is why I keep going back to where it's important to find, I don't know, you've got to find your little inner spark that keeps you going, and that's what I did. You know, I had to really turn within. I prayed to the powers that be that to help me find some guidance, and I did. I found some books at the library that helped me, that I used to help empower myself, and then eventually... Mm-hmm. I built from that, and then, you know, but it took a lot of time and effort, and I had to, you know, I was facing death. I thought that was it, you know, not by, and by his hand as well. He tried killing me a few times too. So I don't know. I mean, when you're in it, it's so difficult, but when you're out of it, and people who are viewing on the outside, it's so easy to project judgment. Oh, well, you know, it's her own fault. And then there we go back to the victim blaming again. So it's just, goodness gracious. Conversations like this are so important.
They are. And they can be difficult for some people to hear, especially when it's hit a nerve. But it's important, you know, that I just want to take this moment to give each listener a high five that maybe you are in a situation where some of the things we're saying are really difficult for you to listen to. And you're not sure that you have the inner strength that you've been talking about, Kathleen. Maybe they are at that hollow place where they're existing and they don't even have the strength to pull the bootstrap. And so I just want to encourage them to reach out and find a shelter or at least a counselor at the shelters, right? Even if you don't choose at this time to go into a shelter, go talk to a counselor. There's no cost.
Yeah,
they will guide you. They will hear your story. It's non-judgmental. They'll be able to give you the emotional and psychological support you need at this time so that you can start your healing process and you can see your value, that you can start putting together a plan of escape and to be able to walk away.
Yeah. It is, creating your plan. It took me a long time to create my plan and to really admit that I needed to do something, and I had to walk away. I really did. I had to just no contact whatsoever, and it was really, really difficult. I mean, I remember standing in the courtroom when I needed to get my restraining order renewed because it was only for a month, and I think that's what it was. And I was standing there just shaking, and that was the last time I'd ever had seen him, was at the courtroom. And when I left, I mean, he wanted to argue with the judge. I mean, he was just being a real, you know what. And because he lost his business, I was the one doing all the work. And because now that I've dropped out of the scene, he went off the deep end. So, long story short, when I walked out of the courtroom, a woman was in there and she was observing. And she goes, "I'll walk with you. I was living in the shelter at the time." And she goes, "Why don't you go for a drive just in case he doesn't follow you back to the shelter?" Mm-hmm. And so I did. And there was an occasion I came back to the shelter, and the counselors there said, "Your ex was here." And of course, they, you know, for confidentiality, they of course denied, like, "I don't even exist," you know.
Right.
But
right,
I just, my heart sank, thinking, "Oh my God!" So he stalked me for about a year. So I had to keep covering my trail, and it was really, really terrifying. So if women are listening to this, thinking, "Holy crap," you know, "is this what I'm going to have to face?" Not necessarily. You know, everybody's story is different, and even if you're just dealing with the emotional stuff, or something just doesn't feel right, get help. You know, it doesn't have to be, don't let it get to the extreme point where I was at, where I nearly lost my life. You know, get help. And, you know, there are resources, and I really love your idea of creating something where people know what's local around here, what's in my area where I can go besides just a local shelter. Now, a lot of shelters do have resources where that they can give that information, but yeah, it's nice to have like place can I go for that support? Where can I go for that empowerment and encouragement?
Right. Let me just mention real quick, Kathleen, because sometimes people might not think about this. We do so much of our research on our computers, and I would caution you to remember anything you research on your computer, the history can be tracked.
Yeah.
Even sometimes when you think you've cleared the history, there can be trails. So as much as possible, try to utilize a library or you know, an outside computer to do the research that you're trying to do. If you don't have any other choice, you don't have any other choice, right? You use what you have. But do your best to cover your tracks, just like when you were talking about going back to the shelter, making sure you weren't being followed. Same thing with your research. You want to make sure your tracks are not able to be followed.
Absolutely. And, you know, and back in the day when I was fleeing, that was around the time the internet was just coming to surface. So I did not I didn't have the internet. I didn't have I had one of those big clunky phones from the 80s. I mean, that's back of the day when I had that. So I didn't have the resources we have now where, you know, like the hotline has a quick escape button so you can get off there. And I don't know if it deletes the cookies. I don't know what it does, but it's supposed to help protect you just for that reason. But yeah, it's terrifying to think that someone can track where you are by your cell phone. You know,
they can
track. Yeah, so there are so many things. So, you know, it's scary that you have to think of those things, but it's important that you think of those things. You know, there was a young woman I had on my show a few years ago when I first started doing this, and her cousin was killed in a murder-suicide from domestic violence. And the sad thing about all of this is that she got out of the situation. She was moving on with her life. She thought she got away from him. She thought, you know, she was totally free of the situation, but he wasn't letting her get away, and he found her. He found her new address, and he ended up killing her and killing himself. And her mother now does a march every year to help raise funds for the local domestic violence organization. And this is in Chicago. And it's like, it's so heavy, you know, to think that this still exists. I'm sorry, I get emotional over this stuff because it's so personal, you know.
Yes.
It's so hard to talk about it sometimes, but we have to, you know, because too many out there are dealing with this stuff. It's the war zone in the home. You know, they talk about, you know, world peace. Well, start with the home, please, because that's where it begins.
It is,
you know,
where it begins.
And then when you get out and you get safe and you get into a place, then work on yourself, work on your healing, don't worry about getting into another relationship because you can't handle being alone. Get yourself in a good, healthy place.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Life is a journey, and it's full of possibilities. Oftentimes we get so wrapped up in what's happening in our own four walls that we don't realize that this journey can have a different turn, that we can take a different road. We have no idea that there are possibilities out there waiting for us if we just take the steps to move toward them. And I would really hope that those who are listening, even if it's not their story, you know, I've talked with others interviewing them for the prospect of being in my book, and this isn't their story, and that's okay. I'm grateful it's not, but they know somebody who it is. We all know somebody, and unfortunately, we don't know how to address it, so we don't say anything, and we just let them continue to live in the abusive environment. And we have to let them know, first and foremost, they're not alone, that we love them, we support them, we're there for them, regardless of what that means, and that when they're ready to make steps, that we'll take them with them so they know that they can still move forward and not be all alone. And that's what it took for my friend. We finally had a day out, and I asked her, I said, what is it going to take? I refer to her as Holly because I protect her identity. But I say, Holly, you know, how long are you going to stay in this? What are you going to do? Wait for your sons to grow up and repeat the pattern? You know, statistically, that's what happens. And I know you don't want that for your future daughters-in-law. And that day she finally found the courage to see a counselor and to start the process. And it was that night that I got that midnight phone call. And that changed the course of my life. And I went through that journey with her. And I would do it again in a heartbeat to help someone else find a life and to give their children a brighter hope and to create that world peace you were talking about, because it does start at home.
It does start. You know, one of my quotes, I shared this the other day in my book, is that all healing and empowerment begins from within. And for us to have peace in our world, we have to have peace within ourselves. And it takes work. You know, it takes work. I see it social media, I see it online, the bullying, the attacking, the blame, the, you know, the hurt, the, you know, because, you know, I'm going to this one is, I'll see people who quote scripture, but then they're attacking a elected, the president or something. I'm thinking, well, that's rather hypocritical. I really don't care what your political view is, but that what you just did is very hypocritical. It's like that is not promoting peace, and that's just my personal opinion. Yeah. But it's easy to point fingers, but the most important thing is look in the man in the mirror. Like Michael Jackson said, it all starts with the man in the mirror, and it's. I don't know. I can't stress that enough. And but it's an important thing. So I am so grateful for you and for what your work is and your projects and just keeping the conversation going. I mean, we have to find our voices, and if we can't find our voice, you know, if someone can't find their voice, we can be a voice for them.
Yes, absolutely.
And, Yeah. So we've got about 7 minutes left, and I was wondering, is there any programs or projects or, we discussed your other project, but anything that maybe in your local area that might be going on that you would like to let our listeners know about?
Well, sure. If you're in the local community, and when I say local, that can be even, you know, a two-hour drive. I have a class that I call Fit and Fierce that allows them to come together on a weekly basis to learn their self-defense techniques and practice and hone those skills on a regular basis, along with some physical fitness. Now, we're not going to get into some hardcore workout in our time together, but it will address the need to be flexible. We'll work on through some yoga moves, get a little bit of cardio, you know, a few minutes in there to start kicking up that metabolism and build some strength through our muscles with our own bodies, not going to the gym and using the big machines, but just to help us have a healthier body and a healthier mind so that should we need to protect ourselves, we have the skills and the techniques, but we also have the body and the mind to be able to utilize them.
So there is that.
And then I love speaking, so I'm always welcome to or enjoy. Let me start over. I always welcome the opportunity to come to their environment, to their office, and to speak with their coworkers about safety or into their circle of their social circle. So some of the ones that I have been visiting with lately have been real estate offices, and the apartment association for their property management personnel, as well as mom and daughter events, the college girls, you know, those going off to college for the first time, those in their senior year of high school. They really enjoy hearing what I have to say and being able to implement the techniques that I share with them. So that's, you know, that's a few. Corporate women, who, especially those who travel or are in a, you know, parking garages and that kind of stuff, find value in what I share because they do find themselves in situations that compromise their safety on a regular basis.
Right. You know, you just gave me an idea, and it probably exists out there. But, you know, instead of Tupperware parties, actually, do people even still do Tupperware parties?
I don't know. They might.
I think it's all done online anymore. But, you know, instead of doing those types of parties, you know, it's like have an empowerment party.
Yes.
Have something that's, you know, I see people do things like the goddess parties and this and that. But I'm thinking, you know, do an empowerment party. Get some tools and resources and find what empowers you. Bring poetry, bring, you know, writing, whatever it is to get it out. And, you know, that's actually one of the tools that I did when I was in the shelter. I knew intuitively to get a journal. So as soon as I had enough money, I bought myself a journal and I started writing. I wrote everything because I knew one day it would become a book, but I wasn't ready at that time to publish anything. But I needed, it was part of my healing. It was it was important to write in the journal. And then after a while, I didn't want to write in that journal because I didn't want it, my life to be just negative stuff because it was filled with all of the hurt and the pain and the experiences. Because I, you know, I wrote out all of the stuff that I dealt with and the abuses. And it's like, I didn't want that. So I got a different journal. And that journal was about empowerment. That one was about dreams, about what do I want to accomplish with my life. So it's that's just one of the many tools that people can do to start the rebuilding process and the healing and the growth. So, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Well, it starts somewhere, and writing for many of us is cathartic. And whether we write just for our own healing and it never goes any further, or if it does become an ebook that you give as a gift or you publish it and put it in a library, you know, regardless of what you think the goals are, just being able to write will help the healing process. A journal can just be a spiral notebook. It doesn't even have to be, a nice leather book.
No. I would hide it, too. I didn't want people to read it. I was afraid of, it was so personal and so my inner everything was coming out that I didn't want others to know it. And you know what? And that's okay. If you don't want people to read your stuff, that's okay. The important thing is that you're writing it out. You're getting it out. I have another friend that was on my show, and she's an artist. She paints. And her abuser slashed a bunch of her paintings. And so she actually uses those because he was chasing her with a butcher knife. So she actually has those paintings, and she does speaking and stuff, and she brings those with her to show as an example of what happened, and she uses as part of her healing. And so she also she teaches women how to paint. So it's like that's her personal journey. That's what she does. She creates artwork to help survivors as a visual thing for them to work. So there's so many things that you could do to help with the healing process. And and then of course the defense stuff. I mean, it feels pretty darn good to kick a board and break it. You know,
it does.
And I did it again a few years later. I was at a conference and I did it again with my hand, which I was like, I thought was pretty darn cool that I could still do that. So it was pretty darn cool. Excellent.
And that's mental development that you have.
What's that?
It's the mental development that you achieved, Kathleen.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, that strength you developed between your ears is what allows you to break that board.
Oh, you got it. Watch out, world. Excellent. Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this show to talk about this subject. It's so important. And like we were saying, sharing earlier about keeping the conversation going, don't sweep it under the rug because it's not a dirty little secret anymore. It's out there. So let's talk about it. Let's find ways to empower others. Let's work on ways to bring this empowerment to our world. Thank you again, Regina. I so appreciate your time and your energy and taking time out of your busy schedule to be on my show today.
Thank you, Catherine.
And so everyone... Oh, you are most welcome. So everyone, you can visit our website at reginarowley.com. All these links are available on projectempowerment.com or projectempowerment.info. Correct me on there. And so everyone, thank you again and have the most amazing day. Bye-bye.